Sacktopia.
Tektopia er en ugentlig podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi, udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Teknologiens Mediehus, støttet af .dk, IDA Forsikring og Messecenter Herning. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Tektopia. Krig, det er ikke nogen god ting, det kan vi vist godt blive enige om, men krig kan godt være god forretning, og krig kan skabe innovation. Og det er, hvad der sker i Ukraine lige nu. Vi har set droner ødelægge russiske kampvogne og sænke russiske krigsskibe i Sortehavet. Det er teknologi skabt af nød og i hastværk. Ofte er det skabt af de mange tech-startups, som Ukraine har. Den amerikanske startup-guru Eric Ries, han skrev i sin bog The Lean Startup for et årti siden, at en startup er et eller flere menneskers forsøg på at skabe noget nyt i et klima af ekstrem usikkerhed. Det er ikke et citat, der stammer fra krig, det stammer fra Silicon Valley, men det passer nu meget godt på de ukrainske tech-startups, som de sidste par år har omlagt deres forretning fra civilteknologi til slagmarksteknologi, kan man vel kalde det. Krigsteknologi, forsvarsteknologi. Kært barn, mange navne. Hvis man følger Eric Ries' terminologi, så har de lavet det, han kalder for en pivot, altså en afgørende forandring i deres forretning for at tilpasse sig markedet. Om lidt skal vi møde sådan en ukrainsk startup, der hedder Himeta, som laver moderne radiokommunikationssystemer. Men først så skal vi lige høre om, hvorfor danske tech-startups de interesserer sig for Ukraine og mulighederne for at hjælpe i kampen mod Rusland samt skabe innovation og forretning. Jeg har talt med Esben Gadsbøl, der er formand for Danske Tech Startups, og han er blevet en flittig gæst i Ukraine.
Ja, jamen, jeg hedder Esben Gadsbøl og er forperson for Danske Tech Startups. Og vi er en forening, som er stiftet af de førende tech-iværksættere i Danmark. Fordi vi synes, innovation er vigtigt, og det er vigtigt, at Danmark kommer godt ind i fremtiden, og at al den innovation, der bliver skabt i verden, at vi får en stor del af det til at ske også i Danmark. Vi har masser af potentiale, men det er vigtigt, at vi prioriterer det. Og ja, så vi laver, nu laver vi tre ting, men vi plejede at lave to ting. Så politik og sige, hvordan er det, vi en stemme for innovation og iværksætteri. Det andet, det er events for iværksættere, så vi har et event, der hedder Copenhagen Town Hall, hvor vi samler 400-500 iværksættere en gang i kvartalet, laver Unicorn Academy og M&A Academy og forskellige events, som vi laver for iværksættere for at spille dem gode. Og så det tredje ben nu er jo så, at vi laver en del ting i forhold til Ukraine. Og baggrunden er, at vi havde et event med den estiske premierminister, Kaja Kallas, tilbage i maj sidste år, hvor vi har længe haft en god relation til esterne. Og så det er den eneste statsleder, der rækker ud til os, når hun kommer på statsbesøg og gerne vil lave nogle events. Det er esterne. Det har vi gjort både med Tarvi Røyvas, den tidligere premierminister, og nu med Kaja her tilbage i maj. Og til eventet i maj, der talte vi så også om Ukraine, og i en af pauserne spurgte jeg nogle af de ester, og der var et par folk fra de andre nordiske lande, også, og så spurgte jeg, hvad kan vi gøre for at hjælpe Ukraine? Fordi alle tech-iværksættere, jeg kender i Norden og Baltikum, vil gerne hjælpe Ukraine, men der er næsten ingen, der gør det. Hvad er det, der er udfordringen? Altså, hvordan kan vi få det til at ske? Og så var der nogen, der sagde fra estisk side, du skal tage med ham her, Ragnar Sass, som har lavet Pipedrive, en af de store unicorns i Estland. Tag med ham til Estland, eller til Ukraine i juni. Og så var jeg dernede i juni sidste år, og har jo så siden været dernede hver anden måned siden. Og de sidste gange har det jo så været, at jeg har lavet en delegationstur ud af det. Så det, vi har fokus på indtil december, har udelukkende været ting, der var, hvor er det, vi har nogle innovative løsninger, som der er brug for i Ukraine, men som ikke er dernede, fordi de ikke er blevet forbundet. Så en af de virksomheder, vi havde med dernede, Det var faktisk tilbage i oktober. Det var Levitate, som laver proteser, og som jo nu har sat ben på, jeg tror snart 350 soldater. Men det er jo en rigtig fed dansk virksomhed, fordi de her proteser er så gode, så de, for det første er de langt billigere end det, der er ellers her på markedet, og for det andet er de så gode, så du bliver sportsaktiv, når du har de her proteser. Så de fleste soldater tager tilbage til fronten, efter de har fået det her nye ben. Så de har fået rigtig meget at se til, og det er jo sådan meget på sundhed, hvor vi mener, jamen der er faktisk rigtig mange danske løsninger, som kan hjælpe i Ukraine, men som ikke er dernede. Levitate er en af dem, der er dernede, men der er rigtig mange flere, som har løsninger, som kan bruges i Ukraine, for de har jo tusind problemer dernede. Så det er et område. Et andet område, vi også har fokuseret en del på, det har været EdTech, fordi når 1,5 million børn ikke kan gå i skole, fordi at de kun kan gå i online skole, ligesom under corona, så er det ret vigtigt at have noget EdTech, altså noget online læring, som er spændende, og ikke have sådan en Teams eller Google Meet undervisning som det eneste, for det er et rigtig dårligt læringsmiljø. Og der er vi jo heldige i Danmark og i Norden, at vi har mange, på grund af den pædagogik, vi har, så har vi mange af de førende virksomheder i verden, som laver online læring. Så der har vi nogen, altså Labster og Area 9, som er nogle fantastiske danske virksomheder, som er i fuld gang i Ukraine. Men behovet er jo meget stort, så der er det samme at sige, hvordan er det, vi kan forbinde de kæmpe behov, der er dernede. Både for læring i skoler og universiteter, men sådan set også, der er jo nærmest ikke den offentlige ansatte, der ikke skal have en efteruddannelse, fordi vi har danskere, der sidder i Dnipro, som træner 4.000 politifolk. Og de skal jo opgraderes, fordi der er nogle ting, de skal forstå nu, fordi der er en krisesituation. Og den der efteruddannelse, du kan jo ikke samle 4.000 mand i et stort lokale. Så der bruger vi jo en dansk edtech-løsning nu til, at de kan lære nogle ting. Og på samme måde er der jo, børnehavepædagoger skal jo tale med deres børn om, at der er krig og angst. Og, så alle skal jo forstå nogle nye ting. Så det er også et område, hvor EdTech er sindssygt vigtigt for at hjælpe dem. For ikke at tale om mobilisering lige om lidt. Altså, hvis de skal have flere 100.000 ukrainere til at være inde i militæret lige om lidt, som er nye og som skal lære en masse ting. Men der bliver vi nødt til at få nogle smarte digitale online. Så man kan sige, at det har været fokus indtil december. Og det kører vi fortsat på. Men i december, da vi var dernede, læste jeg jo i New York Times det her med, at når USA kommer nok ikke med de der 60 milliarder dollar, eller det var i hvert fald usikkerhed omkring det. Og det gjorde, at jeg valgte... Så det var den ene ting. Den anden ting var, at når jeg talte med ukrainere på turmandshånd, så da jeg var dernede i oktober, så sagde alle, at after the victory, after the victory, after the victory. Hvor i december blev jeg meget berørt over at tale med mennesker, hvor jeg kunne høre, at det var et scenarie for dem, at de gik hen og tabte. Og det gjorde for mig, at jeg var sådan, okay, så bliver jeg nødt til at bruge meget mere krudt på forsvarsdelen. Jeg har aldrig forestillet mig, at jeg skulle have noget med forsvar og våben at gøre. Men jeg ved, hvor stor en ressource der er i innovation og iværksætterverden. Så det har ligesom været fokus siden december for min del i forhold til Ukraine. Så det er jo to sider. Den ene del af det, det er at sige, at der er utrolig meget fart på i Ukraine og den forsvarsinnovation, der foregår dernede. Hvordan kan vi i den danske støtte, vi giver til Ukraine, hvordan kan vi sikre os, at vi også sørger for at støtte op om den innovation, der foregår der? Og den anden del, det er jo, når jeg taler med danske forsvarsstartups, så kan jeg jo høre, at der er en masse udfordringer for dem, som gør, at jeg tænker, vores økosystem for forsvarsinnovation, det kunne godt bruge noget mere kærlighed. Og der er det meget tydeligt, at som jeg ser det i dag, så er der et velfungerende økosystem i Ukraine for forsvarsinnovation. Og det går meget, meget hurtigt. Og det er meget simpelt. Det er fordi, de dør, hvis ikke de innoverer. Og heldigvis, kan man sige, så er Ukraine ikke kun et stort landbrugsland, det er også et stort IT-land. Så før krigen, eller full-scale invasion, så vil jeg tro, at af de iværksættere, jeg kender, der er nok det land, der var flest af dem, der havde outsourcet til, det var til Ukraine. Så den der kæmpe pulje af tech-talent, som de har i Ukraine, går jo nu aktivt ind i at lave løsninger, der kan hjælpe landet med at forsvare sig mod en skrækkelig stor fjende. Og det er jo det kapløb, der er, og det er jo der, hvor vi ser, at på droner, der har ukrainerne været markant foran i starten af krigen, men de er blevet indhentet, og det er jo sådan, måske er russerne lidt foran på den del lige nu, hvor hvis man tager havkampen, så er så er situationen jo, at Ukraine har sænket næsten en tredjedel af den russiske flåde i Sortehavet. Og det er en nation uden en flåde. Så det er jo et meget godt eksempel på, hvor vigtig innovation er. Og det er jo det, vi ved i store krige, så er der et innovationskapløb. Og det, der er udfordringen i Ukraine, er, at hver gang der er en ukrainer, der innoverer, så er der jo fem gange så mange mænd eller kvinder i Rusland, som kan innovere. Så lige nu er der et velfungerende økosystem for forsvarsinnovation i Ukraine. Det er der desværre også i Rusland. Der er nogle behov i Ukraine, og der er noget kapital, og der er forskellige ting, hvor de har brug for noget hjælp og støtte udefra, men det går ekstremt hurtigt i Ukraine. Det, der er problemet, som det er i dag, det er, at der er et økosystem, der fungerer i Ukraine, og det fungerer i Rusland. Men det fungerer, hen ad en kant, fungerer det ikke iblandt de allierede. Fordi vi har ikke et forsvar, der er bygget til, at innovationen skal gå enormt hurtigt. Det er noget med procurement, det er noget med sikkerhed, og der er en masse ting omkring det, at hvis vi lavede et våben og skulle teste det af, så ville det tage meget lang tid at få lov til det, og hvis vi bare gik ud på en mark i Nordjylland og testede det, jamen så ved jeg ikke, om man kunne komme i fængsel, men der er ligesom en masse ting, fordi det i sagens natur er, at det er et våben, vi har med at gøre. Hvor der er det jo lige omvendt i Ukraine, der er det, du starter med at gå ud og teste tingene og se, om du kan få det til at virke, og så når du har noget, der virker, så kan du gå ind igennem de officielle kanaler og ligesom få tingene godkendt og få solgt ud igennem forsvaret. Og det er klart, at der er også nogle ting, der ændrer sig, så der var nogle ting, man kunne den første måned af krigen, og nu er vi lidt over 2 år inde i krigen, så der er også nogle andre procedurer, så der er nogle ting, så der er også en udvikling, altså det går meget hurtigt i Ukraine.
Det sagde Esben Gadsbøl, der er formand for Danske Tech Startups, og han havde for nyligt besøg af den ukrainske startup, der hedder Himeta, som lige har fået en investering på $525,000. De laver en slags walkie-talkie, som bliver brugt af lidt over 2.000 mennesker ved fronten, og de har fart på, at de skal have produceret en ufattelig mængde af de her walkie-talkies, som soldaterne bruger til at kommunikere med, og vel at mærke, kommunikere på en måde, som russerne ikke kan opdage, fordi det er et stort problem, at russerne jammer radiokommunikation for de ukrainske soldater ved fronten.
I'm Misha Dominski, I'm co-founder in Himeta. And in Himeta, we design and manufacture tactical communication systems for global defense forces in general, but more specifically currently targeting Ukrainian defense forces fighting in this war with Russia.
And you have two of your products here on the table, one which has been working for a while. I can see that from the wear of it, and another one which is a new prototype. So could you explain to me, what are you doing with these devices? They look like walkie-talkies.
So yeah, at the core it is a walkie-talkie, but to be more precise, it's a walkie-talkie for an army fighting a technologically advanced enemy. We started early in the full-scale invasion as the reaction to the issues we saw in the Ukrainian Defense Forces. There was a big issue of finding the radios, the handheld radios, the fact that there are many of them are overpriced, and even if you have the money, you don't have them at the readily available, because our army has grown over the last 2 years, has grown from 125,000 people to more than 1 million, so a tenfold growth of army. Nobody, no single manufacturer globally is prepared to, you know, manufacture 900,000 radios in any foreseeable future. And so we started as a reaction to that, and after a year of testing and after like 6 variations of firmware, of hardware, and then and many variations of firmware, we launched in like end of April, early May 2023, we launched Himeta G1, which became our kind of main product for the last year. We have almost, we should cross 3,000 in the following weeks, 3,000 handsets in use, but in the process, we learned what are certain small issues and updates that were needed to be resolved and implemented. Because of that, you also can see here on the table Himeta G1 Pro, which is our 7th version of hardware, and whatever 60s, fifth, I think, version of firmware over the last 2 years, which Hemir Joint Pro is what we see is the exact needed solution for the big, very varied army doing very different things. When you have assault brigades, when you have reconnaissance units, when you have intelligence units, you have special operations, artillery, every single type of combat that is done usually by militaries is now present in Ukraine at different front lines, different type of war very often is fought. And we are working on making the product for to be able, that will be able to be used by most of those different users. And we very much act upon the active feedback we receive from them. Because anything we do, new firmware update, next day is already used at the front line. The week later, we receive very kind of up-to-date feedback, what works better, what works worse, and we can act upon it compared to a lot of the existing manufacturers in the world who do like one version every 10 years. So, because, and a lot of things that we've done a year ago were perfect, were just what was needed, already outdated. Even we see it on our solution. So the issue is that right now the technology advances so fast that making one product every 10 years is just not a feasible timeline.
What is special about this device?
There are two specific kind of answers. One is on the side of technology, and another side is on the kind of on the product in general. On the product in general, we are, from what we see so far, the only solution that combines three very important things. We have what we call is the reliable functionality, reliable, relevant functionality that is enough to actively combat, and what that means I'll explain in a minute, a technological advanced enemy which has very strong kind of electronic warfare systems, jamming system, electronic reconnaissance systems, and all of that. But also at the same time is scalable, meaning that you know, we can go from manufacturing 1,000 to 10,000 a month or 20,000 a month in a span of months, not years. And also affordable. And by affordable, I don't mean cheap. I just mean that a lot, many solutions that exist right now in the market cost, they are way too overpriced. They're not just expensive. They're overpriced even for the best funded militaries in the world. They cannot afford to purchase every infantry unit those tactical communication systems. So what we figured is how to make something that is enough by utilizing that access that we have, but also that is scalable and kind of affordable even to an army like Ukrainian army, which we have obviously limited budgets, specifically knowing how big and powerful the enemy that we are fighting. So we need to be very kind of agile and very efficient with the funds, but also obviously even more available and affordable to the defense forces of other countries like our NATO allies and other allies. And on the functionality side, we combine very industry standard things like frequency hopping, spread spectrum technology, MANET, mobile ad hoc network, obviously different types of encryption. We also now kind of playing with the quantum protected encryption, as we see that a lot of the military agencies are already looking that in the future, in the very short kind of future, they will need that solution, quantum encryption solution. So we're also kind of playing with that a bit. We have a very kind of adaptive data transfer, because we saw a lot of these existing systems, they have a very complex way of how you can transfer whatever type of data you need. So, you know, we adapted it in a way where you can, we already integrated as one of the popular situational awareness systems in Ukraine, but we're also working on expanding to integrate with all of them. And after that, going to systems like ATAC, which is the NATO kind of standard situational awareness systems. So doing all of that, which are very often like, we also do GPS tracking, so like Blue Force tracking, all of those kind of things that, which are usually very industry standards. But in defense, very important thing is not just the name of the tech or the technology itself, but how you actually apply it and how reliable and simple to use it is. Because that's what differentiates. Everyone can do very specific one specific technology, but knowing that you know that frequency hopping is going to work the way you want it, that MANET is going to work the way you want it, and all of those things, that's what differentiates good defense technology. Because obviously, when you are in war, you get the most extreme conditions, and knowing that your technology works in those most extreme conditions, that's what is important. So we say that we combine industry standard characteristics with our own kind of proprietary approaches and technologies, because we know what works, what doesn't work.
And you mentioned a specific thing about fighting against a very advanced technological mm-hmm. enemy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if we look at the last, 30, 40 years, most wars, most enemies that, for example, let's call them like democratic and progressive countries of the old fought war, countries and enemies with their most advanced weaponry were like AK-47s, Toyota pickup trucks, and RPGs. Certainly not like powerful modern electronic warfare systems, and it doesn't mean that that tech that was created to combat electronic warfare systems by U.S., by France, Germany, UK, whatever, and other countries is bad. They don't know what was needed, so they try to do the best. And they succeeded doing the best, but the problem is the best is usually it's very, very expensive. It's very hard to scale and manufacture and all of that. And because we have that, in a way, battlefield, let's call it a playground for technology, we know what 70-80% of that the best is needed, but that leaving the last 30% basically allows us to have the price cut by 10 times, by tenfold, by 20-fold, just because we know exactly what's needed. Because that last 20-30%, that's what creates most of the price, because you try to push the limits. There is a big military, the biggest military support fund in Ukraine called Come Back Alive, which does a lot of work helping Ukrainian armed forces and other defense forces. And the head of that military support fund, Taras Chmut, said very important phrase, said, we don't need the best, we need something that is enough and a lot of it. And that's an important thing, because over the last decades, NATO very heavily invested into very kind of small scale but very powerful solutions for special operations, for Marines, for those who are going overseas. You can spend a lot of money on them. But when we look at the majority of the military, and specifically like infantry, they usually overlook, because they are at the they are the territory of the country. Nothing is going to happen on the territory of NATO. But now it's not a given anymore, right? We all. And a lot of the countries are preparing to potentially have, if something happens, they want to be ready to fight the war on their territory and be able to protect themselves. And the existing solutions are not created for that. They are overpriced, very complex, and just overkill very often. And so we have that competitive advantage of making something that is needed, relevant, and again, scalable, affordable.
Og lad os lige igen høre Esben Gadsbøl fortælle, hvorfor Himera er kommet til Danmark.
Jeg havde Misha og Irina på besøg i Danmark for at gøre opmærksom på, hvor hurtigt det går med forsvarsinnovation. For det første at sige, hvordan kan vi støtte op om den innovation, der sker, og hjælpe ukrainerne der. For det andet for at inspirere i Danmark til, hvordan er det, vi kan blive en del af det samme innovationskapløb og komme op i fart, fordi det går virkelig hurtigt. Vi har masser af potentiale i Danmark, fordi vi har så mange dygtige mennesker, rigtig gode universiteter. Så vi har masser at bygge på, men vi mangler rammerne og forståelsen for, at det her det går virkelig hurtigt. Og hvis man, så det vi gjorde der, det var jo, at vi havde Misha og Irina på besøg, og så havde vi dem med videre rundt i Norge og Finland bagefter for at have den samme dialog der. Fordi det er ikke kun en dansk udfordring, det er en udfordring blandt de allierede til Ukraine, at vi har en masse dygtige mennesker, men vi er ikke en del af det innovationskapløb, der foregår i Ukraine, og det er meget, meget vigtigt, at vi kommer det hurtigst muligt.
Har du et bud på, hvordan vi kommer det?
Ja, det har jeg. Altså, det der er det unikke, er jo, at vi har adgang til en testbed med Ukraine. Altså, vi kan teste ting sammen med ukrainerne, fordi vi er nær allieret. Så der kan man sige, hvis Danmark og Europa har en drøm om at have et førende forsvar i verden, så længe den her krig den er i gang, så har vi en helt unik mulighed for at komme foran alle andre. I det tempo, vi har gang i lige nu, så er jeg bange for, at vi først får det her til at virke på den anden side af krigens afslutning, fordi det går alt for langsomt. Og det er klart, det skal vi have lavet om på, og vi skal skrue op for det tempo. Men det er jo også det er jo en helt anden måde at tænke på, fordi det går så enormt hurtigt. Så Misha, som lige har været i Danmark, har jo, jeg tror det er hans 67. opdatering. Og den der nærmest ugentlige opdatering, hvor du så får feedback fra frontlinjen, giver jo et helt unikt læringsmiljø.
Altså en opdatering af det teknologi, han laver?
Ja. Ja. Fordi der jo er et kapløb, hvor russerne kommer med nogle ting, og hvor de kommer med nogle ting. Altså hvor der hele tiden er den der, så svarer man på det, og prøver at få ødelagt den der kommunikationskanal, og så prøver man at lave noget, der gør, at den ikke kan ødelægges. Så på den måde er der jo sådan en electronic warfare, konkret i forhold til de ting, som Misha laver. Så jeg vil sige, i Danmark har vi jo mange dygtige mennesker. Vi har nogle dygtige virksomheder, som også er i gang i Ukraine. Vi skal bare lære, hvordan vi bliver en del af det her kapløb. Så der tror jeg, at nu spørger du til, om jeg har et bud på det. Der vil jeg sige, vi skal jo for det første støtte ukrainerne i den udvikling, de har. Vi skal lære mest muligt af, hvad de har gang i. Og så skal vi sørge for, at i højst mulig grad at få dansk forsvarsinnovation med ind sammen med ukrainerne og lære sammen med dem. Og få adgang til de ting, som de også har adgang til. Så konkret kan man sige, er der brug for, at vi har nogle folk i Ukraine, der kan forbinde iværksættere til, hvad der sker i Ukraine. Så det er jo der, hvor at vi har lige ansat en i Kiev til at hjælpe, som kan være forbindingsled imellem danske iværksættere og det, der sker i Ukraine. Fordi der er brug for en lokal forbindelse og en lokal forståelse og adgang til det netværk, der er dernede. Fordi, altså, jeg vil sige, jeg er vant til, at tingene går hurtigt. Tingene går meget, meget hurtigt i Ukraine. Altså, der er virkelig fart på, så der er også sådan det, der det, jeg har lært for 2 måneder siden, det ser anderledes ud i dag. Og, altså, der er virkelig et højt tempo.
Nu er Techtopia jo et teknologiprogram, så vi kan godt tillade os at dykke lidt dybere ned i, hvordan Emetters teknologi den virker. Hvad er det egentlig, de her walkie-talkies, de kan?
So, at the very core, we take wildly available commercial components. We don't do any like export control, ITAR, all of that. We take... And our background is mostly in commercial, in consumer electronics, which allows us, we put that expertise of consumer electronics into kind of military products, which allows it to make simpler. We only use kind of commercial available off-the-shelf components. And, you know, with the power of programming, let's call it that way, basically created a PTT, press-to-talk radio, walkie-talkie, tactical communications, and there are many names you can call it, which primary use for this is the voice transmission between the... the G1 is primarily used at the level of at the kind of... like a business level of the military, the G1 Pro and all the additional kind of repeaters that we are launching fairly soon. They are for company level, potentially even brigade level, but that's for specific applications. Communication, and we do voice transmission, data transmission, image transmission, video transmission for very different applications. From just, you know, a certain small mobile group going behind the front line doing an operation, and they never spread more than a couple hundred meters from each other, but they need to communicate constantly, to a bigger assault operation where you have where you have machinery, tanks, infantry all together working to assault in certain positions, and you need to coordinate between them, and that coordination involves voice transmission, that coordination involves tracking the location of the infantry and machinery. That's where Blue Force Tracking, so GPS, comes in hand. And then we integrate with situational awareness system, where a commander of the certain operation can look into the at the screen and see where everything happens, and using the same hour radius, transmit back new updates and, you know, information around what's going on, if there is any change of plans and so on. At the end, what we are going towards and what we want to finalize, at least at the very kind of general level, is the battlefield communication system for whatever data you need. Even we're already working with drone manufacturers in Ukraine to use our same technology for data transfer, meaning commands for control of drones and video stream from the drones. Again, with frequency hopping, with MANET, with all of that. And so this is our kind of vision, is this complete front line or battlefield, just wartime communication system, combining in one all of those different types of data you potentially want to transfer, including control of drones, video streams, voice, coordinates for artillery units, and so on.
And when you mentioned the frequency swapping and the this, I don't know what MONAC is, but I guess it's some kind of a radio frequency transmission. It's not possible for the Russian army to jam it.
One thing is, in war, there's like no perfect weapon, no perfect defense. It's always it's an endless battle. You make a better weapon, they make a better way to protect yourself from that weapon, and so on. So those things that I say: one, frequency hopping, spread spectrum. Our radio jams up to like 50 times a second on a 40 megahertz part of the spectrum. What it gives: if you have a fixed frequency radio working at one specific frequency, it's very easy to jam it. You just create noise at the same, you create a signal at the same frequency, just a bit more powerful, and that's all. Your radio is gone. You don't hear anything. You cannot get any data. If you do that frequency hopping and it's pseudo random and it jumps on a big part of the spectrum, to effectively jam it, you need to jam the entire like 40 megahertz part of the spectrum, which is exponentially more hard, because instead of jamming just one frequency, you need to jam, and one frequency is like sometimes like 5 kilohertz. Imagine instead of jamming 5 kilohertz, you want to jam 40 megahertz. Do the math, obviously, that's how much more energy you need to effectively do that. That's one tech. And this technology, because we use quite low powered radio and we also spread it across big part of the spectrum, it's much much harder to find by electronic intelligence systems. It's just harder to find because we are kind of hiding behind the usual noise, because there is a lot of different different signals at the front line, starting from usual 4Gs, Bluetooths, Wi-Fis, and all of that, to all the different drones, your own radios, our radios, all of that. So the lower your the lower powered your radio is, and the more spread out it is across the spectrum, the harder it is to find. The same thing makes it harder to jam. Again, as I said, right, it's just hard to jam big part of the spectrum. And these are two main things that frequency hopping does. And I think it allows to have many groups working at the same part of the spectrum. So basically, because it's pseudo-random, every single separate group of radios will have its own logic of jumping across the frequencies, you can have 10 groups, 20 groups working at the same base frequency from like 800 to 840 megahertz, for example. But because they're all going to be jumping in this different with different logic, they're not going to be intercepting each other, and you can have many of those radios working simultaneously. MANET, it's the abbreviation of Mobile Ad Hoc Network, which is a type of mesh network. Basically meaning every radio acts as a repeater. Every radio, when it receives the signal, it transmits the signal further. Meaning that if we have whatever direct line of sight distance we have, it's multiplied by a number of nodes in the network. Meaning every time I press the button, the next radio that receives my signal repeats that signal, and that radio also repeats that signal. It happens a number of times, and it helps, one, to extend the distance from the first radio transmitting the signal to the last one, meaning very often it's further than the direct line of sight operation of just one-to-one radio. And it also helps when you have very complex topography. You have hills, you have certain like holes, you have trees, you have rivers, banks, all of the more complex the, I don't know, if you're in the desert, dunes, whatever the topography is, obviously this is a radio signal. If you're on one side of the hill, another person on the other side of the hill, there is no way for you to, you know, it's not going to penetrate Earth. The signal is not going to penetrate Earth. But if you have at the same point, you have another person standing on top of the hill or around, you know, on the other side of the hill, for example, our radios will receive the signal and send it further, and this way the person on one side of the hill is going to hear the person on the other side of the hill because there is somebody in between who has the connection with both of them. So that's MANET, and it's kind of automatically created every time you press a button. Blue Force tracking is basically GPS tracking, meaning we have in our app, Android app, we have a offline maps where you can, which allow you to track the movement of the other radios to know what is location of the commander can know the location of their troops, of the soldier, of the machinery, whatever they want to have.
And when it's not working on MONAT, it's running on its own network, or?
So it's always its own network. So it's not connected. I mean, we're working on the kind of IP gate that will have like an Ethernet connection that will allow you to go into like basically go into IP protocol and, you know, connect through Starlink, through 4G, through Wi-Fi, whatever you want after that. But by itself, it doesn't rely on any existing network. It's specifically radio for places where other communication technologies don't work because of jamming, because of burned ground, and you don't have any electricity to power. It's a self-sustainable mobile communicator. You know, our battery life is like 3 to 4 days on average. I mean, officially we claim a bit lower because in winter it's going to be a day. It's normal in winter, obviously, for a battery to live less. But it's 3 to 4 days of operation. And basically, I mean, it's used by, you know, it's used by people, by soldiers who were in the were so behind the front lines, they were basically working the territory of Russia. So that's what this system is created for.
And you just raised a lot of venture money.
Correct. We did just close the $525,000 round. We were working. I specifically was working on it for the last couple of months to kind of accelerate our growth. I mean, we're self-sustainable in the amounts we're selling, in the numbers we're selling to our military support funds directly to the troops or to the government. But obviously, we don't want to spend another couple of years one by one launching the products. Many of these products are needed by our armed forces now to defend, to more effectively defend our country. And so we need, instead of launching the products one by one, we need to grow the R&D team to, you know, come from this. We are, at this point, we are a good tactical handheld radio, but to be a good tactical communication system, the system is the word. It's not one product. It's not just radio. There are repeaters. There are IP gates. There are certain accessories. All of that makes communication system assistant. And we're planning to launch them in the following months, partially thanks to the funding that we received. Also, we're growing the stock, so we're scaling up the manufacturing to be able... one big thing is, and what is a certain issue with current defense tech abroad, I mean outside of Ukraine, is that it's not made to be... It's not made to be procured exactly when needed. It's made to be procured in advance. Kind of usually defense industry, defense tech, it works where the government buys something, you manufacture it over a number of years, deliver it, train it. But Ukrainian defense tech is created currently, and specifically also our ADS are created where we're growing the manufacturing, and usually most of our products are needed yesterday, and that's where that, you know, scalability that I mentioned in the beginning is a very important thing.
You're making the product entirely in Ukraine.
As much of it as possible and is relevant, let's say. So we do obviously chipsets, micro components. They're only a handful of companies manufacturing them. So we are not kind of reinventing the wheel, and we're not making our own chips. But everything that, you know, it's one is fully designed in Ukraine. All the firmware, hardware, software is all done in Ukraine. The assembly, the final manufacturing, the programming, the testing is done in Ukraine. Casings are done in Ukraine. Soldering and assembly of PCBs is done in Ukraine. Kind of, as much of it as relevant and needed is done in Ukraine, so we can have a shorter supply chain, faster supply chain, and doing as much of it in-house as possible allows to be very flexible and change. If we see that there's a certain issue, we can change almost on the go the design, certain parts of the hardware, which is usually very hard if you do everything by third-party manufacturers.
And why are you in Denmark?
I'm in Denmark. I mean, very simple answer is because of I was invited, but the reason I was invited is I think also two answers. It's personally, and as the co-founder of Hymera, I believe that us being in Denmark is the opportunity to bring more partners and clients for us, and also investors for us, because we already have certain agreements with clients internationally where they see the need for the products coming out of Ukraine, like ours. And being for many applications a more relevant product, you know, functionality wise, price wise, scalability wise. And so being in Denmark is one, being able to show our products and work with Denmark as the client, you know, for you to use our quite powerful products, bring investment into Hymera for us to be able to accelerate our growth even more. And I think a very important kind of just a separate point is showcasing that the support that Ukraine receives, financial, military support, it's not only, it's like a one-way thing where, oh, we just support Ukraine. Obviously, you know, we've been talking for the last years that it also improves the safety of Europe in general, because the war is not at the border of EU and NATO, right? It's the border of Ukraine, which... you know, a big buffer zone, which already should be a good enough reason. But if it's not a good enough reason, there's also there are going to be more and more defense solutions like ours, like Hymera, coming out of Ukraine, which are going to be very, very relevant to all our allies because they are very well battle tested. And that's a huge perk that needs to be considered. We're making decision on helping Ukraine because we only exist as Hymera because of all that help we received over the last 2 years, which was substantial help, but definitely very could have been by a number of magnitudes of order bigger. And the fact that Ukraine is still here, that it's fighting, and that we can build our products by working with our military, and we create these products that are all gonna, in the following years, increase the security and safety of many of the Ukrainian allies, obviously including like NATO and EU.
Og det var altså den ukrainske startup Imeter, vi hørte her, som laver walkie-talkies og radiosystemer til brug ved fronten i Ukraine. Men som stifter Misha her, han også sagde, så kan det meget vel være en teknologi, at vi andre også kan få brug for. Jeg linker både til Emetter og til danske tech-startups fra techtopia.dk, og det er jo så også her, at du kan finde tidligere episoder af Techtopia. Du kan skrive til mig på henrik@techtopia.dk. Du kan finde os på X og på Instagram, der hedder vi @techtopia.dk. Du kan deltage i teknologidiskussionen i vores Facebook-gruppe Techtopia Backstage. Du kan følge os på LinkedIn. Du kan abonnere på vores nyhedsbrev på techtopia.dk. Og frem for alt, så kan du selvfølgelig abonnere på podcasten i den podcast-service, du foretrækker at bruge. Jeg hedder Henrik Føns, og jeg producerer Techtopia sammen med Veronica Olin. Vi siger tak for denne gang, og på genhør i næste uge. Techtopia. Techtopia er en ugentlig podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi, udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Teknologiens Mediehus, støttet af .dk, IDA Forsikring og Messecenter Herning. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Techtopia. Techtopia.